Moving forward with Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace. Caroline has got the afternoon shift today, taking Jared's place and talking with our man Adam Vingan. He'll be in the long side and just mentioned the big trade involving the Flyers, the Blue Jackets, and the Kings involving Kyle Peterson, Ivan Provorov, so a big trade, and a lot of rumors that they're going to trade Carter Hart. So there could be a hockey story or two to keep your eyes on a little bit later in the afternoon. In the meantime, we're going to talk NIL, what to do about it. It's always something we kick around during the summer. I know that Nick Saban has got some thoughts. He'd like to go to Congress, and this is a mess. I don't know how you're going to rein it in, but I just got to thinking, what do coaches think in general? Nick Saban certainly has gone public. Others have given – others maybe not so much. But really across all sports, everybody has had to deal with it, and we know it's not going anywhere. So we wanted to call upon Mitch Light for a little perspective here. Mitch, welcome to the show.
Really glad to talk to you guys. And have you and Derek ever kind of talked to each other, two former scholarship Power 5 athletes, about who would have commanded more money on the NIL market? Has that come up? Or maybe it should come up.
Well,
I think I know what Derek's going to say.
Now, you know, Mitch, that just by virtue of the NIT championship that we won, if we were to sell, if you sold all the basketballs with the entire team signature and I got like a buck per autograph or something just for being on the team, you needed to have the complete set. Maybe I could have gotten some pizza money or some beer money there.
Well, I never told you this, really, but I sold your jerseys on the black market. So
I should be getting a cut of that.
You should have, but you had poor representation. Sorry, buddy.
And it was illegal back then. I wasn't allowed.
Yeah.
So I was protecting you, actually. That's why I did.
I tell the story. I went with Scott Droud to a speaking engagement one time to a business, and I had no idea what I was doing. I didn't talk. Scott did all the talking, and they handed me an envelope after it was over, and it was kind of thick. I was like, ooh, what's in this thing? Uh-huh. I was like, ooh, this is big-time college athletics. It was a goo-goo cluster. It's like, oh, all right. I thought maybe just a roll of cash or something.
Do you remember our freshman year, Scott Drought hit 9 threes in a loss against to LSU. Maybe if he hit 10 or 11 threes in Vanderbilt Warren, there would have been cash in there.
Maybe. Yeah. It's too bad. Yeah. That's one of the all-time great box scores. I found it the other day. I'll send that to you, Mitch. You and I will enjoy it. It was a game on CBS. Mm-hmm. Shaquille O'Neal's freshman year, Chris Jackson. Mm-hmm. And the final score was something like
121-109.
Yep, that's exactly right. 121-109. You want to talk about
it? I would say that Chris Jackson performance in Shane Foster's senior night were the two best college basketball performances I've ever seen in person.
Yeah, you talk about some NIL possibilities for Shaq, Chris Jackson, Stanley Roberts, some of the guys on that.
I don't think they needed
it. Yeah,
you know what I mean?
They were getting their own NIL.
They may have been getting some version of NIL back then. Okay. So,
sorry,
Mitch, we know that Nick Saban is going to do his best to use his clout to try to bring some order into this. But I just got to thinking, and I asked you this morning when we were talking about this topic, if you could poll privately all of the coaches, and I sent this to D-Mace too, let's just focus on football for now, but I think an array of coaches, I have a suspicion, when they heard about NIL, they probably thought one thing. But if you could maybe say today, all right, guys, we thought this was going to be good, but we're going to magically make this disappear. Yes or no, would you say, I'm pushing this button to make it disappear? What percentage of coaches would say, yes, make it disappear?
90.
90?
I would say, I think it's a mess, like you said. And I want to preface that by saying, I don't think coaches are against their players getting compensated or making money. It's just the way it has materialized through the collectives and the pay for play. Like I thought NIL was a great idea. You know, I always use this example, like Hendon Hooker at Tennessee gets to campus, not that highly regarded of a transfer. I mean, we knew who he was. He was a starter at Virginia Tech, but what he did for that school of course you deserve to make money, how much money Tennessee makes. So go do a sponsorship with a car dealership. I'm sure the coaches at any school in a similar circumstance, that's great. But to lure kids through the transfer market, through the portal, or freshmen to pay for play, no coach wants to be a part of that. It wants to be it's just a mess. And I'd say 90, like, because most schools, like if you say there's 130 FBS schools, you know, obviously the lower end, they're not competing in that space, but I'm using the whole thing. Most of them don't want it because they don't have the money and they can't compete. Like the ones at the top, like Nick Saban, doesn't want it probably because he was dominating before it came, and now he is facing stiffer competition from new markets, so to speak. So I just think the way it's, like I said, the way it's materialized, that very, very few coaches like what they're seeing right now.
So 90%, D-Maze, do you think that would be that high? I mean, that's a high number.
I think it would be right around that number.
In its current form, where it's sort of out of control, collectives, craziness.
Yeah, I think it would be right around that number, but not to completely take it away, but revamp it.
Yes.
You know, do some things that everybody – do something in a way that everybody can benefit, meaning all these kids, not just specific kids or specific universities. Mitch, what I do want to ask you is this. And I know you remember this. This might have been, maybe 8-9 years ago. It might have been a decade when the Northwestern athletes, and it wasn't just football athletes. It was their athletes in general. They wanted a union, and they were, you know, getting on the news, and they made it, you know, it was this big headline. In the NCAA pushback, Northwestern pushback. Do you think in retrospect they should have just worked something out with the students because they would have been able to really set guidelines back then? Because now there is no guide. It's basically the horse is out the barn, and if you can pay, then you can pay. If you can't, then so be it. That's your problem. But had they taken hold of it earlier and not set on this sort of pedestal and the arrogance of them, you know, they should have done it a long time ago, and they wouldn't be in the position they're in now, I don't think.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to answer your question with like a non-answer. Like, I think you're making the right point. And the reason I'm not answering it is because I don't know all the details. I don't remember all the details. Despite being an economics major in college, I don't know all the ramifications of unions and all that stuff. And it's just, quite frankly, I did not pay as close attention to that as I probably should have there. But I think your point is more that if the NCAA, or the point I'll make, if the NCAA was more proactive in this 10, 15, 20, 25 years ago, we would not be in this spot right now. Like, I don't know if it's the athletes being actual employees or not, but if there was some way they all made money, if every football player or every athlete made X amount of money. And I used to think, I've changed. I used to say, oh, there's no way that's possible. Like the money, how could you pay the volleyball player the same as you do the football player? Well, with the TV contracts and all that stuff, there is enough money. And you can figure it out. So I think if they would have been proactive in this and instituted something, we never would have gotten to this stage. And I think 95% of the people involved in athletics would be in a better spot right now. Now, you could say, hey, the recruits and the kids right now, they're the ones that are earning on the top end. They're in a better spot. Sure, they are. But I would like to think we could have something in place where everyone's getting some money, and then on top of that, you can actually profit off your name, image, and likeness like the kids are who are already established stars in college.
But shouldn't they have seen this? Because after the O'Bannon, after the O'Bannon verdict, him winning, Ed O'Bannon, the brothers that played at UCLA basketball when they were winning championships, when he won, shouldn't the NCAA, they should have known, hey, listen, this thing is coming, and we can't stop it.
100%, and smart people said it at the time. They said, you know, it was one of those headlines that for those of us that followed sports, we saw the headline, didn't really pay attention because didn't really know the ramifications. But the smart people who were involved in business and sports and law and all that, they're the ones that said, this is going to be a big deal. And it took longer than maybe some people thought, and it's become a huge deal. It's just one of the many criticisms that people could throw at the NCAA. But this is something that could have been averted.
And Mitch, isn't it fair to say that it's only mushroomed more since this all hit like a ton of bricks last year, right? It's now advancing quicker with, you know, state laws that are starting to set the ground rules that are maybe advantageous to the football team in that state as opposed to other states. Like, it's getting even more complicated. And I just think of a football coach who's sitting there, and you already have a million things to do beyond the practice plan for that day or the recruits that you're seeing for that day. Now you have this entire world of things that's ever-changing and very, very important that could make or break your career, right? I mean, that's why I think it's 90%. So crazy to say that, but I think it's probably realistic.
Let's keep it local here. I mean, Clark Lee in the offseason had, you know, had some good players step up. Will Shepard, guys like that. It's no secret that they were desired on the open market, put it that way, and that they are still at Vanderbilt through some NIL efforts. And we saw the Tyron Lawrence saga play out for Jerry Stackhouse. And so it's just another layer that these coaches have to worry about is retaining the talent on their roster. And it's not just convincing kids not to transfer. It's what can you do to keep them in your school? It has. It's like you said, it's mushroom. And the thing about it, and we get this all the time at The Athletic, and, you know, I work with Ari Wasserman in recruiting and stuff. He does this mailbag. Like, how come you guys never talk about the money involved? How come you? Well, we can. They're not public record. You know, we have been fortunate enough to actually get some actual contracts for NIL on a couple high profile cases. But that's the 1% or the less than 1%. Our writers talk to coaches and high school coaches, college coaches. The money you hear is 90% of it's BS anyway. It's just you don't know what to believe. So that's another frustrating thing. Nothing anyone cares that like makes my job more difficult. But from a reporting end and talking about it, trying to be smart about it, we just don't know. And then you know how rumors take off, and everyone, someone hears a figure and they run with it. So it's just added another layer of everything because you just don't know what to believe.
Out of the 130 plus NCAA Division I football schools, how many do you think gain an advantage because they do have the deep pockets to be able to really do this right?
I don't know if this is your exact question.
Because maybe that's your 10%, right? The 10% of coaches that might say, yes, I like the NIL. You could probably figure out what schools those are, right?
I think there's probably about 10 to 12 schools that are in a better position now than they would be if everything else being equal. And I know we probably got to go in a second, but here's a great NIL. Just how everyone thinks their own school screwed up or their fan base. Like, I deal with Audrey Snyder, who covers Penn State. And Penn State they've got three NIL collectives. They're kind of warring with each other. I mean, if Audrey could tell you stuff she's heard off the record, it's unbelievable stuff. And, like, James Franklin doesn't think his school's doing enough, and everyone's just so fans are going.
James Franklin doesn't think that he wants to move the needle further,
shocking,
push the envelope. No way.
But so he doesn't. So no one at Penn State thinks they're doing enough in NIL. We did a Big Ten Confidential. If you've read our Confidential series, where we talked to a bunch of high school coaches throughout either a state or a conference footprint, and all of the high school. One of the questions was, like, what school is like doing the best with NIL, like. Six of the eight high school coaches said it was Penn State, that they're organized, they've got their ducks in a row and all this stuff. And I was just flabbergasted because then I hear it from the other side. So that's just one example of just, you just don't know what to believe.
It's complicated for sure. And some of it's out of a coach's control, right? Coaches love to have control, organized. I know exactly what's happening, and you're not supposed to know what's exactly happening with the collectives.
Exactly. In theory, you're not allowed to. Just think, you know, we talk about football so much, but think about a basketball. You know, you got, and I'm not talking about Vanderbilt or Jerry Stackhouse and Tyron Lawrence specifically, but if you think you got a good team coming back next year, and then the day of the transfer portal is about to close, one of your players leaves because someone's gotten his ear. And you're like, okay, I've got, you know, it's not an 85-man football roster. It's a 13-man roster. And then like, what do you do? I understand their frustration. No one's shedding tears for these coaches. They make a ton of money. But, you know, they want to win. It's their livelihood, and they put a lot into it. So I get where their frustration comes from.
Yeah, it has to be frustrating. And then, you know, it has to be frustrating from, you know, the coaching end of it for the kids that are not making the NIL money, and they're seeing all the kids that are. You know, they look at it as, listen, we're doing exactly what they're doing, but we're not getting paid for it. We're working just as hard as they are. But that's just the way of college sports now. It's run like a professional league. And you're going to have the haves and the have
nots. That's another headache for the coach.
It's like what I am interested in, because it's maybe just with the sort of 1% kids that are getting these huge deals, then you got to bring in some type of financial person, guy or girl. How do you stop it from being affiliated with an agent or an agency? It's just so much stuff that kind of goes into this that I don't even think the NCAA even thought about it. Or if they did, they just don't care.
Yeah. Collateral damage, you know, just things you don't think about. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm fascinated, just like you guys are, where are we going to be in 2 years? Where are we going to be in 5 years on all this? It's you know, with the transfer portal and NIL, college athletic, no sport has changed more in the past, you know, 18, 24 months than college sports.
No doubt. Mitch, good stuff. Thanks a lot, as always, for coming on. We'll talk to you down the road, and let's look back on NIL 1990s. You know, what could have been? What could have been?
I'll run some numbers to figure out what you were worth back then.
Yeah, and then D-Mace will do the study on Michigan State as well.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
We'll do a comparison.
See you guys.
All right, see you later. All right, when we come back, we'll tell you who's on the field, who's not on the field for the Titans at minicamps. It's going on right now. There'll be some media availability a little bit later. Caroline and Adam Vingan are coming along at 2 o'clock, so they'll have more detail on that as well. Stay tuned. You're listening to Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace.